thinking a lot about the beach lately. Right, anyone else? I think a lot of you know that before we lived here, our family lived in Pensacola, Florida, basically on the beach. And there were some questions about, why would you ever want to leave the beach and go to snowy Chicago? And do you remember at the fall feast, one of the questions was to find somebody who doesn't like the beach? And when we found somebody, everyone was like, oh, I can't believe you don't like the beach. Why don't you like the beach? And a lot of people feel that way, right? Do you ever stand on the beach? A lot of my friends in Pensacola were this way. And they would stand on the beach, and they would say they just felt really spiritually connected, you know? Like, you're looking out at the vast ocean and realizing how small you are, how big creation is, how expansive God is. Have you ever felt that feeling? I mean, I think I get it. The beach doesn't make me feel that way, though. I feel that way when I'm riding the L. No, I'm serious, though, because, and I feel like I've always felt that way in cities. I feel more spiritual because you're sitting there and you might be in a crowded car full of people, and then you look out the window and you see these tall skyscraper buildings that you know, like, each of those rooms is full of people. There are cars going by. You just feel surrounded by humanity, all going in their different directions with their different purposes and feelings and passions. And when I stop and think about it, when I'm in that situation, that's when I feel how small I am and how vast God is and how we're just one little part of what all of creation is doing. And on today, when we light the candle for peace, I'm reminded of what Mother Teresa said. If we have no peace, it's because we have forgotten that we belong to each other. If we have no peace, it's because we have forgotten that we belong to each other. And feeling surrounded by all the people is how I feel God's presence. That's how I feel God's love. It's from people. Like our reading from John's letter, we know God's love by our love for and from one another. And John indeed says that God is love. Advent is all about waiting for love to become manifest in this world, for love to become real. And Advent is our time to get ready. So we're getting ready for love to be made manifest, and we're focusing on love during this season. And we have this great piece of theology from the Apostle Paul in his first letter to the Corinthians. And that whole chapter is all about love. What love is, what real love is. Okay, I rarely do this, you know, if you're here for when I preach. But I think looking at the actual Greek here in this passage would be really fruitful. This letter to the Corinthians, along with the whole rest of the New Testament, was written in Greek. And in Greek, there is more than one word for love. Many of you may know this. Where in English, we use the same word love to say, like, I love my mom, or I love pizza, or I love football, or, you know, we just have that one word for love. In Greek, there are different words. There's this word eros, that means romantic love. Phileo, which means brotherly love or friendship kind of love. But the word here in 1 Corinthians 13 is repeatedly agape, eternal, divine love. And it's the same word that John uses in his letter when he says, God is love. God is agape. And that's not the end of the interesting things we can glean from the Greek here in this passage. Paul says, I can have the most beautiful words and spreading good news, but if I do not have love, agape, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And that line really stuck in my head as I was sitting with this text over the past weeks. What did Paul mean by being a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal? What's the deeper symbolism here? The symbol symbolism. No. So I turned to the Greek, and I found some interesting things there. All four of those words, noisy, gong, clanging, and cymbal, are very rarely used in the Greek text at all. The word we translate here as noisy is where we get the word echo. It's only used one other time in the New Testament. The other time is in Luke's gospel, and it refers to roaring waves. So it's not just noisy, it's kind of like that drowning out kind of sound, and it has more chaos to it than that. And the word gong, likewise, only appears a few times in the New Testament. It's also in Matthew, Mark, and Revelation, but in each of those, it's translated as money, based on the context clues, because really, that Greek word that's used there just means anything made of bronze. But there are no other references to these bronze gongs, where they translated in 1 Corinthians as gongs, in the New Testament. But Plutarch writes that the Parthians used bronze drums, the same word, in battle to cause fear in their enemies, the Romans. So what is it? You know, noisy money, or what else made of bronze? What if they were thinking of these bronze war drums? What if that's what Paul was thinking of? So we could have these deafening war drums or cacophonous money. It kind of has a richer imagery than we have in the English. Okay, but it doesn't stop there, because clanging is the Greek word alalazo. It's a battle cry or wailing in grief. And the only other time that word is used in the New Testament is in Mark, when one of the leaders of the synagogue's daughter dies, and there's a great commotion and people weeping and wailing loudly, weeping and alalazo. So it's not just clanging, it's a war cry. And the word cymbal is just the word cymbal, but it doesn't appear anywhere else in the New Testament at all. And the only other place that it does appear in the whole Septuagint, which is the Greek version of the whole Bible, of the Hebrew Bible. Okay, are you like all bored yet? I feel like there's like a couple of people who care. But I feel like this is so interesting. So just stick with me and we'll get through this. So in 1 Corinthians is the only other place in the whole Septuagint that this word symbol is used. And it's when the Israelites are bringing the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem. So it's obviously, it's joyous. It's this whole celebration. And that's the only other reference to the use of symbols in particular, and it's for celebration. So I was at the Prisms of Winter concert at OPRF earlier this week, on Thursday, and I was really looking out for the gong and the cymbals, because I'd been sitting with this text, and guess what I saw? One of our very own high school students was playing the cymbals. And he doesn't even play the cymbals. Yeah, it was Charlie. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I'm going to watch and see what he does. And I was thinking of this passage, and I was seeing how much drama the cymbals added, but I was also really struck by this, how closely he was watching the director, right? So usually when you have like a whole orchestra, you're, you know, playing your violin or something, you're kind of looking at your music and looking at the director, and the, you know, directors do this whole bit mostly, you know? And I guess you just know when to come in, I don't know. But for the cymbals, Charlie was like locked in on the eyes of the director, right? And the director didn't just do this bit, the director did, you know, this thing that they do when they're like, you know, that thing. And so, right? That's kind of what you look like. But I was just struck by how closely he was watching and how the director was really sure to give the signal to cymbal. And because I guess if the cymbals go off at the wrong time, it's kind of noticeable, you know? Like maybe if you hit the wrong note on a violin, you're covered up by the whole community of violins that's playing along with you, but you have to get the cymbals right. When you're playing the cymbals, it would seem from my one night of observation, you really need to come in at the right time. You have to be in step. You have to be in rhythm. And Paul here is saying that without love, even our words of good news, our well wishes, our sermons, without love, they're like cymbals that are not in step They're like cymbals crying war, wailing in grief. They're not simply cacophonous. They're misused and misplaced. So this passage could have been translated, "If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but have not love, I'm a roaring war drum or a celebratory instrument making a war cry or a mournful wail." So I guess it was good how they translated it. But when we look at the Greek, we see that it's really a mismatch, a misuse of the instruments. It's out of step with how these things were used. Paul is using this dissonant imagery to illustrate the dissonance between well-intentioned actions and actually loving actions. It reminds me of the Silmarillion, you know, the prequel to The Lord of the Rings, where the whole universe is created with a song, a universal harmony, and there's this song throughout it, and everything is in tune, and then one creature decides to increase the power and the glory of the part that was assigned to himself. So he's trying to do good things, but he's trying to do it for him, and he introduces this dissonance into the universe. The book says, "The original harmony of the music was thus consumed by a sea of turbulent sound until it became like a raging storm, making a violent war of sound." And it's that kind of dissonance that I think Paul is talking about. It's not loving, and it's not peaceful. But peace isn't the same as silence, right? I kept thinking about a line that one of the students in America to me said. It was Keyshawn, and it was the episode where one of the AP American Lit teachers is in Ms. Stovall's class, and they're talking about the narrative of the life of Frederick Douglass. And the teacher who's visiting is saying how in his AP class of mostly white students, the discussions about Frederick Douglass don't go very deep. He says the conversation is mostly up and back. You know, slavery is wrong, so it's good that we don't have slavery, but they have a hard time going any deeper. And he's telling this to Ms. Stovall's regular track class, and Keyshawn speaks up, and he shares this phrase. He says, "People are confusing peace with quiet." And he says, "I've really been thinking about that line, about that quote, because when people are quiet and not talking about racism and stuff, they think everything is peaceful, but really, they're just scared. People are confusing peace with quiet." And I don't think peace is silence for Paul either. I don't think he's just saying, be quiet. He's saying, speak, yes, share the good news, yes, but do it with love. Love can transform your words into more than a noisy war drum or a celebratory instrument used to make a war cry. Love transforms that mess into something productive, like creating a steady rhythm, like a drum beat, a timekeeper, a peacekeeper. It takes us somewhere. It lays the foundation, and all the harmonies and melodies can be built on it. Paul goes on to say, basically, if I'm brilliant, and even if I have faith enough to move mountains, but if I do not love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, all my time, all myself, but do not have love, I gain nothing. He doesn't give any more rich and rare mismatched imagery, but his point is the same. All our efforts are not effective. They do not count. They are nothing without love. We could have the most engaging Bible studies and entertain or even maybe teach the children. We could give everything we have into service at the food pantries, at Housing Forward, at F&D. And we could have the best music. We totally do. But if we don't do it with love, it doesn't build anything. It doesn't amount to anything. It's just dissonant and confusing because its purpose is to be in love. I worry about making everything perfect, about the lighting of the candles and the singing the right songs and doing everything just so. But all that is required is to love. Which brings good news for us this Advent season, because our worth is not determined by our busyness. Our worth is not determined by our productivity. They will not know that we are Christians by the extent of our programming. Jesus says they will know that we are Christians by our love for one another. So are we living into that? I have some good friends in this congregation who like to remind me that we should always be asking ourselves, where is the love? We should always be asking ourselves, where is the love in everything that we do? Because it's what makes everything else matter. The most important component is not eloquence or perfection or even sacrifice. It's just love. So if you're looking for your sign, your signal, your permission to calm down, to seek peace, to choose love this Advent season, this is it. You have permission to seek peace and choose love. May we all choose love as we await the advent of the one who is love. Amen.